Today, Laura Richards shares the truths about emotional abuse, coercive control, and the practical steps women can take to reclaim their power and start living life on their terms.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week, we had Laura Richards on the show, and we had a powerful conversation about why women stay in abusive or controlling relationships. Laura shared her personal journey, what coercive control looks like, and the steps women can take to reclaim their power, rebuild their self-worth, and move forward confidently. Why do women stay in relationships that are harmful, even when the warning signs are clear? Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, I'm joined by Laura Richards, international podcaster, number one best-selling author, speaker, and narcissistic abuse recovery expert. Laura is the host of That's Where I'm At podcast and author of Married to a, quote, nice guy. I have to say that because we're on the air, right? And Getting Over Narcissistic Abuse. She is dedicated to empowering women to reclaim their voices, rebuild their self-worth, and step into lives of confidence and strength after narcissistic abuse. Today, Laura and I will be discussing why women stay in abusive or controlling relationships, how to identify subtle emotional abuse and manipulative patterns, and practical steps to reclaim your power and move forward. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you. I think we have so much to talk about.
Yes.
And I'm really ready to dive right in. So if you will, Laura, for our listeners, would you just share a little bit about your personal story? And then we'll go from there, right? Because we know it led you to these amazing books and podcasts. And, you know, let's find out a little bit about you, because clearly you have used these experiences to really make an impact for people.
Yes. Unfortunately, I became an expert, not like I wanted to. You know, I just thought I was getting a divorce, and I thought it was irreconcilable differences. And as I started healing, I started unraveling lies, and then then had, you know, a bombshell with my ex where I really saw all the lies. And then I started hearing about narcissism. And, you know, the word is used right now, but to me, it really pinpointed what had been happening to me. And I felt really alone. And so I started talking about it. I was very petty on social media, just talking about it. And from that, it kind of grew into wanting to have a safe space for women to be able to tell their stories. I just felt like I wasn't allowed to talk about things. And if you've ever been in abuse, you know that word allowed. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't allowed to talk about things I liked, wanted to do. And this is really up my alley of who I've always been, of helping women and talking about things. But I mean, I've changed so much in the last few years to a person sometimes I don't recognize. I'm like, I have no anxiety about talking about this stuff because I had to be quiet for so long in abuse that now I'm free to do whatever I want. And I don't want anybody else to go through this. So that's why I started doing all of this.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you did. And I know that there are many women out there who are happy, and our listeners now are going to be happy because they're going to have more information. And that's just a beautiful thing, right? You were quiet for so long, and now you don't have the anxiety. You can speak freely and honestly. And that must be just a huge freedom that you have now experienced.
Yeah, there's not that weight anymore.
Right.
You know, for anybody who's been in abuse, you know that it just everything, you're walking on eggshells. You're so anxious. You don't even know why you are, you know, because I didn't even know I was in abuse because I had a covert narcissist. That's why my book has quotes around the word nice, because everybody thought he was such a nice guy. And I sat at home going, what am I missing?
Yeah.
How do I not see it? And so I was told it was my fault when things weren't good. So I just had to learn how to be a better person. And so that sent me to therapy. And guess what? That's where I found my voice. So it's like, thank you for sending me to therapy.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, and I just think it's so important, right? Because everybody thinks, right, he's this great guy. Wow, look at that. He provides for you. He's so social. He adores you, right? Like that's all out in public, which, you know, I think as we experience those things or just as we, you know, the more time you have to see different people, you're like, it's never like it appears, right? There's always stuff, but you don't know it could be that bad. And I think that's so, so common for women who are in your spot. You're just always wondering, what am I missing? What am I not seeing? Because, man, this doesn't feel great. Right. This doesn't feel like a nice person.
It didn't feel like he was nice, you know? So it doesn't feel
like
it.
Like, I'm walking around on eggshells and, oh my gosh, he's going to explode. And just because I didn't, you know, do something.
Right. And, you know, we never know what's going on behind closed doors. And I'm sure that you deal with that, right? And, you know, people like, I'm sure people tell you all the time, like, everyone's so surprised we're getting a divorce. And so we never know what's going on behind closed doors. And when you're with a narcissist who is projecting a different way in the world than they are at home, it was really confusing, is that whole thing of like, what am I missing? And then everybody thinks he's still great. And he moved on, you know, the smear campaign, which we can talk about all that stuff. But the smear campaign is that he left a horrible wife. I was horrible. All those things, anything to make them out to be a victim. And also to be able to do what he's doing. If he's telling lies, if he has a new supply, all those things, to be able to have a narration for his story. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with all of that. And that's what I help other women do. It's like, you got to be okay with them talking about you because you know the truth. So,
yeah. Okay, and that could take me off on this whole other tangent, which I'm not going to do.
Okay.
I'm going to put like a pin in it because like I could just, we could just go down this whole path on that. But that's not what we're here to talk about. I will say, because this is what I think, is that people, society in general, they are so easy to believe that we as women are the bad guy.
Yeah.
It's like we're programmed, preconditioned from birth to be like, men are great. Yeah. And if it went wrong, it was the woman's fault.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we're societalized that way.
It is. It's everybody and, oh, no, that can't be right. Why do we think that? I don't know. Yeah, but anyway.
You didn't give them enough sex or whatever the narrative is. You know,
you
all
worked
those
too
things,
hard. Yeah, all anything. The things.
Yes, exactly. You were focusing on your career rather than your man and all those. Yeah. So that whole narrative. Yeah. I mean, we're societalized that way. So, yes, there's no winning.
There isn't.
That's okay.
Well, there is, because you are winning because you're saying
that's
what you want to say. You are winning now.
That's right. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, all righty. So let's talk about this. Why do so many women stay in relationships that are abusive or controlling, even when they see the red flags?
Yeah. Well, this is, so I think about this a lot, and I've been asked this question. And, you know, I think, okay, so we never blame for abuse, but we look at ourselves. And I know for me, I had a deep need to be loved. And also, we also are, I think, societally, you know, people give up on their marriages too quickly and things like that. And I also had everybody, my parents, his parents, everybody was still married after decades. And I just thought this was my person. And when he would give me a little breadcrumb, that I was living off of breadcrumbs and hope. And the breadcrumbs are like a slot machine. You know, it's going to pay out every once in a while. And so you hold on to the payouts, you know, it's that intermittent reinforcement. And that's why people stay so long, because of intermittent reinforcement. Because, oh my gosh, it was good right now. It was good then. Things like that. Because even women who are physically abused don't stay for fun. They stay because maybe they're stuck or they feel like they're stuck. And also there's intermittent reinforcement.
Yeah.
And that was me for 3 decades. And also, I didn't love myself enough to think I could do anything else or be anybody else without this person. How would it ruin our family? How would it, whatever? It did not ruin my family. We've had a lot of healing, my children and I. It didn't ruin the family. He did. And I'm not going to take responsibility for that because I did it. I walked out with integrity out of our marriage, you know, so, and I never, people want to say like it takes two to tango, not in abuse, because we don't blame for abuse. And I've done a lot of work on myself to understand what happened, what do I need to change so that I don't go into these relationships again. And these can even be in friendships. We want to be healthy people of society so that we don't let anybody walk all over us, even friendships.
And that's a great point. Now, this, I love this. The analogy of the boiling frog is often to describe these relationships. Now, was this your experience or did you know something was wrong immediately?
So I didn't know anything was wrong immediately, but I can look back and see them. But the boiling frog is a great analogy, especially in covert narcissism where, you know, they're one way at home and another way out in public. So the boiling frog is that you don't even know that the heat is being turned up. You know, the frog gets boiled alive because you don't know the heat is being turned up until, you know, I started to see things. But again, you have that intermittent reinforcement where it's like, well, this is getting better now. Or we would go to therapy, or I would go to therapy, or I'd read a book and maybe it'd get better for a little while. And you just live off of that. Yeah. Right. So that's why with the boiling frog, then the heat gets turned up some more and you don't realize what's happening.
Yeah. That's true in so many relationships because it becomes part of your normal too, but slowly.
Right.
And it takes getting out to have that objective look to go, whoa, I didn't realize it was as bad until you can really get some space to look at it from the outside in, right?
Yeah. And it was, that to me was kind of embarrassing. I'm like, wait, how did I not know I was in abuse? I didn't know that was abuse because they're very covert. Also, when you have emotional and psychological abuse, I had people telling me, well, he didn't hit you. So were you really in abuse? You know, those kinds of things. Yes. Yeah. I didn't even want to be alive. So yes, I was very much in abuse. So that kind of thing was hard to reconcile, you know, having people say that to me.
Yeah. And it's terrible. That's awful. I mean, I think that's why doing these shows like this and what you're doing, bringing awareness, because it's happening and it happens so much, and just allowing women to hear what it is so that you can get out and you can recognize it. Because if nobody's acknowledging it, well, of course you're going to think you're crazy. Right. Because you're like, this is happening, but like nobody else seems to be talking about this. Right. So it must be me.
That's exactly it. And of course, he's telling me it's me as well. Anytime I had a problem, it is me. If you were a better wife, if you were better, whatever, you know, insert whatever arbitrary thing here, then that must mean that if I was better at whatever, then our marriage would be better. That's what he said. And so that's why I worked on myself a lot. I swear that's all I ever did. But the last
which
few
is
years,
a positive out of this once
it
you know
is.
But wow, that's exhausting.
So exhausting because you don't have a willing partner that is he would tell me that I don't have anything to work on. Whatever you need, you know, whatever your problem is with me, you have to go to therapy to work on that so that you can deal with me. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I really was like, okay. Yeah. You know, okay, that's what I'll do because I trusted him. He was my husband. I trusted him. You know, so why would I do anything else until one day I had to wake up and be like, what the hell's happening here?
Well, let's talk about that. Was there a specific instance that really brought you to the realization that it was time to leave? Like what happened that was able to help you see what you needed to do?
I just think, okay, so the last couple of years, he was really in the discarding phase, which like barely talking to me, we weren't intimate, things like that, like where you are looking at your marriage going, is this really a marriage? Like what is happening here? Anytime I would bring it up, of course he would say, you know, if you were better or whatever, all the things I just said. And he was ramping up like I would call it infidelity, the way he was with other women.
Okay.
That was a problem throughout our marriage. And those kinds of things were happening. So we tried marriage counseling one more time. And when we were done with marriage counseling, I said to myself, what if I have to live like this for another 40 years? It was arbitrary.
Yeah.
Now, by my age, I'm like, what if I live another 40? Am I going to live with him like this? I won't survive it. I won't survive. I didn't even want to be alive. I was so depressed. Oh. So awful. That was the question I had to ask myself. Can I continue in this situation? And I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. So that's when I decided to go.
Now, will you explain a little bit? We've talked about it on this show, but I'd love to hear from you to explain for our listeners coercive control and the ways it can show up behind closed doors.
Yeah. So, I mean, coercive control is like isolating you from your family, from your friends, like trying to control your everyday life, trying to control your finances, monitoring your phone, you know, wondering every single thing you're doing. Why are you dressing the way you're dressing? Are you seeing somebody because you're dressing that way? Why is your skirt so short? Those kinds of things. Just intimidation, gaslighting, anything like that. So that's why it's like the boiling frog and also like a death by a thousand cuts. It's a little bit at a time. It's not always because, you know, sometimes if somebody like yells at you or they hit you, some people are strong enough to go like, oh my God, I'm out. But when it's done a little tiny bit at a time, you don't even realize. You don't even realize what's happening.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, how does abuse in a relationship affect a woman's sense of self, confidence, and decision making?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you definitely go from, you know, that fight or flight. Well, you go into freeze mode or fawn. Fawn is very much the, you know, you kind of just give up and whatever they want, you just go, okay, yeah, I'll do that. That's fine. How women stay stuck for a long time, and this is where I was at, was I was in freeze mode. I couldn't make decisions on my own because my self-esteem, my self-worth was so eroded. And anytime I tried to say, this is a decision I'm making, or this is an opinion I have, I was told it wasn't right and nobody cares and those kinds of things. So looking at me at the end of my marriage, I was frozen with fear to leave and almost like, can I ask him permission to get a divorce kind of thing? And then also, I didn't even trust myself because I was told for 3 decades that I shouldn't trust myself. So they really erode your self-worth. That's why that's one of the biggest things I work on when I coach women, is working on our self-esteem, because we come in like a shell of a human and we got to dig ourselves back out. We can rise like a phoenix, so don't worry.
That's right. You can get it back, right?
That's
you
right.
Can
oh, get yeah, it for back. Sure. Yeah, for sure you can. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about when a woman decides to leave, right? When she gets to that point, right? I'm not going to survive this if I stay.
Yeah.
What are some crucial steps she should take to protect herself and her children?
Yeah. So I was never in physical danger. So I have a lot of resources on my website. There's tons of people who can help you with this as well. But first thing I would do is do not tell the narcissist that you want to leave. You have to be safe. Doesn't matter if you've never been hit. That could be the day that you do get hit. So you have to think about your safety. Also, they will try to use that intermittent reinforcement to control you to stay. And they future faking, saying, I promise I'll go to therapy, I'll be better, etc. And so we want to be really quiet. We want to start stashing money if you can do that. Some people, there's tons of people who are doing this on the internet who can talk to you about it. And I have a bunch of resources for that. And, you know, so stashing money, none of these things I knew because I didn't even know I was abused. But the not telling him every step I was making, that was a pleasure. Because after being controlled for 3 decades, I was just packing things and going about my life. And he wasn't questioning me. Or if he was, I would say like, I don't know, I'm going to take this just because I think I should take it. And he wasn't really fighting me too much on that, but you want to do it really quietly. That's the biggest key. Make your plans, find somewhere safe to go, make your plan quietly.
Right. And you can't emphasize that enough. I have always stressed that because especially when you're dependent financially on somebody, nothing good is going to come out of that conversation. Nothing good for you, right? Like whether they do all of those things to talk you out of it, but then they're going to be like, oh, I better limit her access and canceling cards.
Right.
And like, I'm going to take away the little bits maybe that she has access to.
Yeah.
I'm now going to go in on that. And that's where it is going to make it so much harder. Much harder for you. Because it's still going to be a challenge, but
Yes, exactly. And so, just be careful and then check out resources that you can find. I have people who talk about all this stuff. So many resources I have because I wasn't in fear of my life. So
Yeah.
I didn't think he would physically harm me, but I wish I would have done some things differently. But now, you know, I didn't know. So that's why I talk about it now, to help others.
And I think that's so important for women, right? Because we're not there in your situation. Right. And I think that, you know, many times I've heard over the many years, and I'm sure you have as well, like, well, he has never done anything. And it's like, but you know this person so well. If there is something inside of you that's like, but he might snap, believe it. Trust that.
Yeah.
And protect yourself, because you know your gut is telling you what he possibly is capable of. Right? We all have that sense.
Right? Of course. You know, and this is the thing I think about, is that if you're catching them, say you do realize what's happening to you and you're catching them in lies and things like that. Because now looking back, I'm like, okay, so if he lied to me for this long, why would I think he told me the truth when we were getting divorced?
Yeah.
So that's what I try to tell women who are in the middle of it. It's like, just assume he's lying. You know, just assume if he's saying like, well, I'm going to do this. I had a friend who was going through a divorce and her ex didn't want her to write out the parenting, you know, the co-parenting agreement. They would just verbally do it. And I said, hell no. Hell to the no. She's like, but you know, I go, and I had to remind her, I go, he's already been lying to you. She goes, oh yeah, that's right. I go, yeah. And then you'll be stuck with these terms, these generic terms that he wants you to write down. So if you know that he's been lying, just assume he's going to amp it up when you're getting a divorce.
Right. So let's talk about that. How important is having your own attorney or professional support, even if in your mind you're thinking the divorce separation seems amicable?
Yeah. Well, for sure, I thought we were having irreconcilable differences, and I live in Nevada, so we're a 50-50 state, and we filed and we're divorced, you know, within hours. Our divorce process took about 6 weeks, only because of me. I was dragging my feet on the paperwork because I was in a daze. I was like, I can't believe I'm getting a divorce. So I did not have my own representation, and I wish I would have. I didn't have somebody representing both of us. You don't have to go through a lawyer if you don't want to. I mean, Nevada's very easy. Come get married, come get divorced. Yeah. Same day for both. It doesn't matter.
Crazy. You know?
It is crazy. And in a lot of ways, great, because it was over and done with really quickly and we didn't have minor children. But thinking back, I'm like, why didn't I have representation? Well, because I was an abused woman who didn't know she was being abused. And I was sitting there in the office, like really quiet and like, oh yeah, that's good. Sure. Yes, that's fine. You know, and so I didn't know, because I was scared to say, well, I don't think that seems fair, or I would like to do this. And so that, thinking back, I wish I would have done things differently. You know, whatever. Hindsight is 20/20. What can we do? And then, but later on, a few months later, after I found out he had been cheating and all these things, we sold our house together because he had taken property of the house and then I was being paid for my proceeds. And I said, no, I'm not interested in ever having any contact with him ever again if that's what he was doing. And that Laura was a different Laura. Like, because I knew what was happening. I was very well aware. I had a voice. I could demand what I wanted in the house sale and all these things. And I actually made a couple of demands that were really like, I didn't care if they happened or not, but I just wanted to, because I was like, let me test my boundaries.
It was the new you, right? Yeah. You're like, oh my gosh, that is so great. And, you know, we can recognize this, like, I mean, we as our attorneys or even you, right? Our clients, they've been involved in this in so long. And then now you're still listening to your spouse and he's like, you're paying your attorney too much. They're not helping you.
Yeah.
And they'll come to our office with all this. And it's like, we actually have ethical obligations. Like, our only job is to help you. Why would he say that?
Right.
He is trying to get in your head and to feel like, to make you doubt us, but you want to believe him, although he's treated you like this for so long and you are getting a divorce.
Right.
It's and I recognize that. Like, it's so hard because these, you know, as a victim, you're just so wrapped up in it. And it's a pattern of believing him, listening to him.
Right.
It's very difficult for these women to break.
Yeah. I was still stuck in that pattern. I was still stuck in the fawn response, which is just going along with whatever he said. And I don't feel like, I just think he hid money because I didn't have my own representation. We didn't have the discussion for discovery or anything like that. Yeah. And I think he owes me a lot of money, but there's nothing I can do about it. I'm not going to go back and try and get it. Unless you feel like doing that.
I can't do it in Nevada, but I'm always like, yeah, we should look into that.
I know, right? I know. Yeah.
What you've learned, though, that's where, right? Because we always learn so much looking back on things. That's where you can help women so much, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I learned the hard way. Yes. Probably an expensive lesson. Why don't you benefit from this, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I talk about all the time, like, this is what happened in this situation. This is abuse, you guys. You know, like, I posted a picture today that was just like, right after I took this picture, I got in trouble. Why? Because I took another one with my kids and I was looking too fun and he wasn't in the picture. And so these are the things that people don't understand. I got in trouble for that because he's like, why wasn't I in the picture? And my little poor baby toddler heart is hurt. And so I don't care. I make fun of them all the time. But, you know, it's those kinds of things that add up, the boiling frog, the 1,000 cuts, you know, like it adds up over and over and over to the point where you go like, I can't make one move because he might get mad at me. I can't make a decision because he might get mad. So, of course, when I'm sitting in my divorce, I can't make decisions because I'll get in trouble.
Yeah. Right. And
That's how I've been trained for 3 decades.
Yeah. And it doesn't just have like, okay, you were able to go through the divorce process. But yeah, for our listeners, like it doesn't just happen overnight. Like it's going to take work. And they have this, I'm not going to say power over you, but power is a good word. You feel as if they have it.
No, it's a power imbalance, for sure.
And it's a pattern. It's such a pattern that you're just going to need a lot of practice operating separate from them to find yourself and your voice again, right?
That's why it's so good to have somebody like you, you know, supporting women. Because if they've been in abuse and they have never had that, and there is a power imbalance, it's great that you can...
Yeah.
You know, you can say like, hey, you know, we can actually look at that. And like, do you feel like that's fair? You know, those kinds of things. I think because, you know, when you're at the end, I was just like, I was trained. And so a lot of stuff is just no, I don't need to decide. He'll decide. I want him to be happy because I'm at peace and our house is at peace when he decides or he makes the decisions. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the role of, say, therapy, supportive communities, and trusted resources. You know, when you're rebuilding confidence after leaving, like, how important is that?
Oh, it's so important. I never want women to do this alone. That's why I started doing this, because I felt really alone. Because when I started talking about that, it was abuse. The people around me were like, you shouldn't talk about that. And I was confused about that. So I was in therapy, so I felt very safe there. And then I did do a divorce group, which I did not feel safe there. And listen, you have to go around and find things. You're going to see those friends that are supportive. You're going to see those friends that say like, hey, tell me everything. I'm here to listen. I'm here to help. But always a trauma-informed therapist. If you can find, you know, a divorce group that maybe discusses trauma, that is more helpful. Mm-hmm. The divorce group I was in did not, and it wasn't helpful to me. But I was strong enough by that point that I could kind of filter that out. And at the end, I was like, well, that was a waste, but that's okay. You know, we live and learn. So be looking for things that are supportive. And then, of course, people who are doing this work online, like I have a support group that I do every Saturday, and women just come and talk about what's going on. And then we share experiences to help each other.
And that is so great that you do that, because I find there aren't a lot. Yeah. Of support groups, not in this area. And certainly there are none that are just women. And, you know, there are a lot of faith-based ones, but it's just not going to be as supportive for you if there are men there, I think. Like, I just think there are some issues that women just need to be able to talk about with other women.
Yeah. So the one I did was faith-based, and there were men in the group. But I have to say, this is what happened at the end. Since you brought it up, this is what happened at the end. I called the national organization of that divorce group and I said, you guys are woefully unprepared for abuse, because all 15 of us had been abused. All 15. Some of us. Yeah. Wow. So you think that you think people are just getting a divorce? No. Like these poor guys in there. So that's why, like, for me, I do like all women and I only serve women. But these poor guys, like, they had been served papers. They're sitting in a divorce group and they weren't even divorced yet. because their wife was off with a boyfriend already. You know, like they were already trying to heal. And I feel like that kind of information needs to be talked about. It wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. And I did talk to them and I don't recommend the group anymore.
Yeah.
Because I think if you are not strong enough, it might be harmful.
Exactly. And so, yeah, that's, I think, exactly what you said, Laura, is look, seek out different things.
Yes, exactly.
Because not everything's going to be right for you.
Right.
And, but go try it out. That's the beauty of, you know, there are really a lot of positives that have come out of the pandemic, meaning there's so much online where you can just really connect and still feel like some anonymity, right? You might live in a small town. You're like, I don't want to go to that group.
Yes.
Or this is at our church. I'm not going there. Everybody's going to know.
Right. And I think that's a great point. You know, I do mine via Zoom. And so I have people from all over the world, actually. And it's great that we can connect, because I think that was one of the great things that came out of the pandemic. I mean, it wasn't much, but that was a good one. That we can communicate with each other like this all over the world and still feel somewhat supported. So, you know.
Well, and that's important, because just what we talked about, it, that support, for one, for you can say something and someone can hear you and say, I hear what you're saying, and you're not alone. You're not crazy.
Right.
And, or this is abuse, because like what you went through, I mean, there are still a lot of places where people are going to be like, no, you guys are making all this stuff up.
Yeah.
All this narcissist stuff is being made up.
Yeah. I saw a video on the internet and I was like, what? I was like, this is it. And so then I just started voraciously researching it. And I said, oh my gosh, this makes entire sense for my entire life. And so, you know, what that helped me do was put a name to my pain. And then I had a way to target my healing. And I tell women all the time, you don't have to have a checklist. You don't need to know if they're a narcissist. Doesn't matter. I said, can you live the way you're living for the rest of your life? And if you can't, you might consider something else. You might consider making a change. And that's what I did. But I use the word narcissist because he's textbook. And that's, I think it's important to really target our healing and the way we were abused so that we can talk about it in a certain way. So that's why I use the word.
Well, and I do think that's important. One, I think exactly what you said, it's important to put a name on it. It helps you feel like, okay, you know, I can understand, right? You can read, you can be like, oh, okay, I understand this. And, you know, one thing though for our listeners is, and this is the hard part, but, you know, I gotta let you know the good, bad, and the ugly. It may not be something that will be remedied through a divorce, meaning like the judge isn't going to really care.
No, don't bring it up in court. No, they don't care.
No, no, that is so hard because we talk about it so much. And they're like, but he's an art. I'm like, I know, but what, how the law works, right? Something happens. Where's your relief? There's no relief for that. Your relief is your divorce.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Being free.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to be a changed person after that. I mean, like, you know, I just, I thought it was the worst thing that could have ever happened to me. And then I started to heal. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing that's ever happened. It's the best.
It is. And I think the support is key, and trying to understand, one, where these women are, because oftentimes I think, I don't know, I'd like your opinion on this, because from the women that you work with, you know, women are hoping maybe for some relief, some validation from the court process, which doesn't really happen. And it's hard to explain that there's not a lot of place for relief in the state of Florida. Like, there are some other states that are really working at, like, enacting laws about coercive control and working through that. We're not here yet where we are in Florida at all. But, you know, I would love for you to speak to that, because I know you talk to so many women and you know, what you think they can expect from the legal system.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to speak more to the validation part, because we have been trained in our abusive relationship to only accept our external validation from our partner, from our narcissist. And we don't know anything about ourselves. We don't have any more internal validation. We don't even know who we are. We don't love ourselves. This is what happened, because they have beat us down so far mentally, sometimes physically. So what I work on with them is, you're not going to get validation from something external. So if you can really break through that, it won't bother you in the court system. You'll be able to walk through the court system with your goal in mind of I need out because I love myself too much to stay. I need out. And so no one is ever going to love you like you can love yourself. You are going to find out at the end of this that you are the love of your life. And that's the end of the story. And that's what that changed my life and boundaries. But you won't ever set a boundary if you don't think you're worthy of a boundary being set. And so those have to go hand in hand. But self-love, that's the first thing. That's the first thing. Yeah.
Well, that makes so much sense, right? Until you're worthy, you're not going to set a boundary.
Right,
so
exactly. You have to do those together. They go hand in hand.
Now, let's talk a little bit, if you can speak on how can women break the cycle of staying in unhealthy relationships so that they can reclaim their power?
Well, boundaries. So we have to learn. Listen, we do have to learn loving ourselves and boundaries. Those are going to be your two keys that open everything. And they do go hand in hand. Boundaries was a game changer for me. It changed my entire life. And it's because I started loving myself and seeing how I was being treated around me, not just in my marriage, but in other places. And saying like, no, why are you treating me like that? Like, so as a recovering people pleaser, or actually a former people pleaser, I thought boundaries were telling other people what to do. No, it's not. You know, you can ask people to like, hey, can you stop talking about my body? Or can you stop whatever they're saying? But you will decide what you will do with that. And that's what a boundary is. I get to decide what I will do if they don't stop. And so there's people who aren't in my life because they couldn't do the boundary, you know? And to me, I kept saying, so you can tell people, hey, I need you to stop doing that. I don't like that. And then some boundaries, you're just, I don't know, you might not ever say anything, but I've had a few where I'm like, I have a problem with this and I'd like to continue the relationship. But if you continue with that, whatever the thing is,
right,
I can't continue with the friendship, and that's it. And that was the biggest game changer. That's going to change your life.
That's awesome. Now, what advice do you give women for rebuilding their lives and self-worth after narcissistic abuse?
Well, definitely trauma-informed therapy and, you know, read whatever you can, not just books about like, say, narcissism or something like that. Read some books. I love self-help books. I'm a weirdo. I almost never read novels. I'm like, how else can I grow today? I just love that kind of stuff. So self-help books, you know, and then working with a coach, I think is really important because a coach will move you forward. Therapy is so great. We need to dig out our past. How did we get here? Like, we don't blame for abuse, but sometimes I wonder, like, I started to ask myself, how do I keep choosing clowns? How do I keep showing up to the circus? And I wanted to know that. And so I dug all that out. And then I started working with coaches to move forward. And that's what coaches will do. And then if you are into any kind of practices, spiritual practices, holistic practices, do anything to feed the spiritual side of you in whatever that is, even if it's just walking in nature. Maybe you decide to go back to church. Maybe you are learning to meditate. Like, you have to include it all, you know, mind, body, soul, you know, do it all. Just try it. If you don't like it, try something else. I just like, try it all. I've tried so many things. Yeah. Cause I chased after my healing, and that was my goal, was I'm going to go out of this feeling better. I didn't just like leave my marriage and go like, okay, well, on to the next thing. No, I was devastated in a shell of a human. And I said, I want to feel better. What do I do? Like, what do I do? And I just started with learning how to love myself. And at that time, you know, like, who does God say I am? Like, journaling, those kinds of things. Anytime a friend gave me a compliment and said, you're so brave, or you're so strong, I love your laugh, whatever, journal it and take it in, even if you don't believe it right now.
That's great advice. Now, Laura, before we go, our show is called Women Winning Divorce because I believe we can win at divorce and win at life. Yes. I would love to know what winning at life means for you.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and I think it's that you get to decide who you are and what you do in your world, not just because you don't have a partner telling you what to do, not that, but that you feel good enough in yourself to make your own choices and goals and your own decisions. To me, and then the biggest one for me is like, I have peace in my home. That was my ultimate goal. And so anytime I have a lot of peace in my home, I'm like, I always say, I said it to my friend last night, I go, I won. Wow. Because when we talk about certain things, I always say, I won, because I know how much peace I have. And he didn't. He didn't have that. He caused a lot of issues. And so I didn't have peace in my home. And that was my ultimate goal, was to have peace.
Which is wonderful. So yeah. I commend you for that. Now, I can't believe it went so fast. What a great conversation.
Well, thank
but
you.
But lastly, where can our listeners find you for more information and resources?
Yeah, my podcast is That's Where I'm At podcast. And you can find my website, thatswhereimatpodcast.com. I'm all over social media. That's Where I'm At podcast. So just go looking for me. I'll be there.
All righty. Well, we also have it in our show notes, but we've reached the end of our show today. Thank you so much, Laura Richards, for joining us to share your insights on narcissistic abuse, why women stay, and reclaiming power. Your guidance will help so many women listening today feel empowered to take control of their lives and their futures. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Heather. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today.